Now, another BloomerBoomer.com podcast. Your host, Andy Asher, living life over 55. Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
We are talking about a society in which there will be no roles other than those chosen or those earned. We are really talking about humanism.
Gloria Steinem, born March of 1934, an American feminist, journalist, and social and political activist who became nationally recognized as the leader of and media spokeswoman for the women's liberation movement in the late 1960s and 70s. Well, hi, everyone. This podcast is going to hit home to a lot of people because as we find more time on our hands, a lot of us begin dreaming about vacations. Of course, that really scans the globe, but I'm finding some really cool vacation ideas nearby that I sure never thought about. I was talking to my friend Mark Hoffman, who's been in the travel industry, it seems like forever. Well, 34 years to be exact. He owns Sports Leisure Vacations. That's sportsleisure.com. Anyway, back to our conversation. He was telling me about a trip he was leading on old Route 66. Now, doesn't that bring back some memories? For baby boomers, Route 66 is really an icon of the time we grew up. From Chicago to LA. More than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route. That was the John Mayer version of the Disney Cars soundtrack. So, anyway, I digressed again. Back to our talk with Mark Hoffman. He is our guest today. And, Mark, it's great to have you on the show.
Andy, it's my pleasure.
Well, Mark, I know you're a really busy guy. In fact, right now you're getting ready to take off from Minnesota. Well, in any case, in addition to leading some great trips, which we'll hear about here in a moment, what else are you doing?
This year I'm also serving as the volunteer leader of the National Tour Association, so that has increased my travel schedule just a tad. In fact, I am just returning from some NTA speaking engagements in Minnesota today as we speak. So my travel schedule has gotten even a little more crowded, but there's still time to take folks out on the road on a regular basis, which is something I really do enjoy.
Great. So you were speaking at an engagement. What's the big thing in the world of travel these days in from the professional standpoint?
Well, part of my job as a volunteer leader of the largest group of tour operators in the country and people who do business with tour operators is to go around and help hoteliers and destinations and the like understand how they can better do business with us and how they can keep the business that they have, you know, what are the hot buttons, what are the things that they need to do right to serve that market segment, because when a big group of people are arriving together at a hotel or an attraction or a restaurant, sometimes the services that they require are slightly different than what a walk-up guest would require, and some places are capable of handling that without a hitch, and some, frankly, are not.
So you try to get them up to speed on what's required and that type of thing.
Exactly. What they can do to best work with tour operators so that if they have that business, they can keep it. And if they are looking for more of it, why, they'll have a better chance to get it. So I'm just out trying to be the educational arm of the National Tour Association. And along the way, I get the opportunity to meet a wide variety of people from a host of different destinations. Many of them very off the beaten track, secondary destinations that I would never find at major trade shows. So my payoff for volunteering is going around and being able to meet all these folks from fabulously interesting places like New Ulm, Minnesota, and one of the places I visited this week, a little German town here in the southwestern corner of Minnesota near Mankato, and there just are a lot of wonderful places to see and learn about in this country. And so I get a chance to go out and tell people a little bit about how to work with me and my peers, and perhaps along the way learn about things that would otherwise go undiscovered that might make sports leisure vacations trips just a little bit more interesting than some of our competitors.
And talk about undiscovered. I mean, who would have ever thought about a tour down Route 66? But what a fabulous idea.
Well, we just completed that journey here recently, Andy. It's must have been my, what did we count up? It's my 22nd trip down the highway, my 11th tour group, and then 11 trips without a tour group. So it is something that I never knew when I first went out on that old ribbon of looking for that old ribbon of concrete 15 years ago, that it would become such a part of my travel resume, but it just has. I have a tremendous, I didn't know until I got out on Route 66 how much I loved off the beaten track and how much I loved small towns and interesting things that other people would probably just pass by. Old courthouses and Times Squares and fascinating old restaurants and just places, people who collect things that are somewhat unique and bizarre and unusual. And it's kind of like stepping into an episode of Hoarders, you know? It's like meeting strange people, but they're nice. They're not threatening in any way, shape, or form. And there's a whole host of them out in this country, and there's a particularly large number of them along Route 66. So as we went from Chicago to Oklahoma City, the first stretch of what will be a two-part trip, we'll do the Oklahoma City to Santa Monica stretch in the spring. I got a chance to remake some old acquaintances along the road, some folks out there that I've known for a long time who are really special people.
I think for a lot of us, Route 66 was so symbolic in many ways. The long, desolate roadways represented the freedom, of course, car travel and all it represented, and some unforgettable sights and experiences.
Well, the thing about Route 66, Andy, is that for those of us who are in our 50s or 60s, for this major group of the population known as boomers, who have spent all of our lives getting from point A to point B as fast as we can, this is how people got from point A to point B before there was an as fast as you can. And we've never traveled these roads. And in many cases, we've never seen these towns. You can go to San Francisco without ever going into Davis or Dixon or Vacaville or Fairfield or Rockville or some of the other little hamlets that people don't even know exist because they aren't names on road signs along I-80. That are part of the old Lincoln Highway route and the old US 40 route to San Francisco, which are not exactly the same but fairly close. And you go down the road, you'd never get into those towns. You'd never know anything about them. You'd never know anything about the history or what made them tick or what their downtown looked like. If it was healthy and vibrant or if it was decimated by a Big Lots store on the edge outskirts of town, you'd never know if it had great flavor. I mean, you know, we don't even get the onion smell when we drive by in Vacaville anymore, and there's a whole generation of people who have no idea what I'm talking about.
Of course, in my day, my memories range from whether we could make it over the Mojave Desert without our car overheating or finding the next filling station before the gas was gone, or just simply imagining what that next small town ahead was like.
Well, I think you'll find, Andy, one of the demographics of people that are out on the road, it's really interesting, especially on the old highways now, and some of the back roads, are people on motorcycles. And these folks are not young people in most cases. These are people in their 40s and 50s and 60s, and dare I say probably even 70s. And they're riding their bikes on the back roads because they do not need to travel at 70 miles an hour anymore, nor do they even care to, nor safely could they. And they're on the back road, and they're humming along at 50 or 55 miles an hour, enjoying the scenery, stopping in all the places that they never had time to stop at before. And it's amazing, you know, and what we grow up thinking of motorcycle gangs now, a motorcycle gang is an entirely more innocuous and friendly group of people in most cases as they make their way along the old roads. And in 66's case, it is not uncommon for groups of foreign travelers, Czechs, Germans, English, Dutch, to come to the United States and rent motorcycles and do the whole highway themselves. It's really quite a huge part of Route 66 tourism base is the international traveler, which is somewhat unusual, I guess, because generally international travelers don't always make it to the heart of a country. But in this case, Route 66 has such a famous brand name, as you mentioned, from the television show and the like. People overseas have heard of it, and they want to travel this funky, quirky old road and meet the people along it, which is only serving to give it a whole other generation and a whole another lift. You know, the movie Cars was based on people who are people in places that can be found along Route 66.
Now, I know there are an awful lot of travelers out there that are a lot more experienced than me, but I've never heard of these kind of tours. Where do you find out about them?
Well, there aren't too many people who, frankly, who offer extended tours on the old highways. I don't know of any other company than our own, and we kind of float between Route 66 and the Lincoln Highway and Highway 101, and so we don't do the same road every year. But next spring we will offer the what I would call the western portion of Route 66 from Oklahoma City through a little bit of the Texas Panhandle and New Mexico and Arizona and across the desert of California to Santa Monica. So certainly at sportsleisure.com you could find something like that, or you could probably Google Lincoln Highway tours or Route 66 tours, and you probably would find folks who offer tours along short stretches of the highway for a day or two, which sometimes is a nice way to see it, and you can certainly make more stops when you're driving a shorter section, but it's important when you travel an old highway to allow yourself time. It's not like going down a freeway, and to cover 100 or 150 miles in a day is a lot, and you want to be able to stop, and you want to be able to, the beauty of it is the opportunity to meet people and learn about where they live and what their lives are about, and those are things that you don't do in major metropolises or when you're driving down the interstate stopping at McDonald's to get a burger.
So, Mark, give me a sense of what a typical day is like on one of these historic highway tours that you conduct.
Well, for example, on a day leaving Chicago, we would stop in Joliet and pick up a local guide and visit the museum there, which has a decidedly... Joliet is a town where the Lincoln Highway and Route 66 happen to cross each other, one of the only place where that happens. And because one is kind of they're both east-west roads, but one 66 wide from Chicago to Santa Monica, so it has little bit of the north-south feel to it, especially when you're in the Midwest. And so we leave Chicago, we stop in Joliet, we pick up a local guide, an author, John Weiss, who takes us on back roads through Dwight and the town of Odell, where a wonderful old service station was fixed up thanks to the generosity of the Hampton Inn people and some local preservation folks who put a lot of sweat equity into an old service station and restored it to its original 1930s grandeur, which might seem really insignificant to a lot of folks, but they're preserving a piece of our history in the country. Further down the road is Pontiac, which is a great, wonderful little old town with a Route 66 museum and a classic courthouse, and just a wonderfully beautiful place. The towns of Atlanta, another little old Route 66 town, and make your way on to Springfield, which is the land of Lincoln, which is certainly worthy of a day that's not necessarily connected to the old highway, but there's a great Lincoln Presidential Museum there. So there are all of these wonderful places in south of Springfield. There's the Rabbit Ranch, where a man who owns a title company gave his daughter a couple of rabbits, and she left for school, and the rabbits multiplied, and now there's a gazillion rabbits, and he has a title company and Rabbit Ranch and Route 66 gift shop, and he's a fascinating person to stop and talk to, and why he has a rabbit ranch, I have absolutely no idea, and I'm not sure that he does either.
Of course, that was part of the nostalgia and the excitement of Highway 66. You'd see road signs in the middle of nowhere, it seemed. Of course, there was the famous Burmashave signs and some oddball barns and businesses, along with the unexpected.
Oh, absolutely. I've been traveling that old highway for about 15 years in the case of 66, and I have a whole host of folks along that road who I pretty much don't talk to unless I'm calling to set up a tour or I'm bringing one through, but we are extremely good friends and always exchange a lot of hugs, and there's a lot of catching up. And for some reason, the folks along the old highway don't, it's not to say we don't use the internet or we don't communicate that way, but news tends to travel up and down the old highway by traveler as opposed to by the most modern method and fastest method of information communication. So it's a little bit of a throwback. You can see the world's largest rocking chair in Missouri, and you can further down the road in Missouri, you can visit a place where a man is buying the buildings in his hometown and moving them to a place and recreating his hometown, a little town of 800 that he grew up in, and it's in a floodplain, and so he's buying the houses and buildings one by one and moving them and recreating his hometown. That's certainly as quirky as I've ever heard of. Interspersed along the way, there's the ladies on the route in Galena, Kansas, who have the tow truck from Cars in their front yard and talk a mile a minute. We'll regale you with just about any type of Route 66 lore you can imagine if you stop to see them. So, yes, there are more places along that old highway than you could stop at in a month of Sundays. It's like a Charles Carroll festival every day.
Mark, you certainly have sparked my wanderlust once again. And I always like to ask you this as we wind down. Any tips, any ideas, anything that you might be able to tell us about how to make traveling a little easier and a little bit better?
Well, one thing that's happening here, Andy, is that the TSA pre-check is coming to airports all over the place. Now, this is important to people who are frequent flyers or people who might be top-tier flyers with an airline who fly a lot. Or people who want to, who aren't top tier flyers who just fly frequently, you can go to TSA.gov and you can find out how you can be cleared. If you're already a top tier flyer for some airlines, you may have been cleared by your airline previously. But what it means is that you go to the airport and there's this pre-check line, not the frequent flyer line. That's always a little faster than the regular line, but a line and where you go through, you don't have to take off your shoes or your belt because in essence, they have already decided that you are less of a security risk. So we're not looking for the little tiny things. We're looking for the big things that you zip through security quite a bit quicker. You still go through a metal detector and your stuff still goes through the same procedure that it would normally, but you're allowed to leave things in your bag and the like. It's a much quicker procedure. The line is much shorter. If there's anybody out there who is a frequent flyer or who flies frequently, I would say frequently is more than once a quarter. This was previously only available at major airports, but it is now available in Sacramento, and it's available in even some secondary smaller airports with only one security line can zip you through quicker, just not having to completely disrobe. I find is just an easier way to get through life. So that is something that has just come up recently that I would call to everyone's attention. And I would also call to folks' attention out there that if you're somebody who has traveled a lot through the years and amassed some points or credits in a frequent traveler program with a hotel or airline or something like that, don't let those points just sit there. Figure out a way to use them before they expire because you didn't attend to them, or worse, even almost as bad, that the airline or the hotel system goes through and devalues their points like Hilton has twice in the last 4 years. And suddenly you wake up and your 400,000 points are only worth 300,000, and then a couple of years later they're only worth 200,000, and you're pretty soon you're down to where a whole wheelbarrow full of them will get you, you know, one night at a cheap place. So if folks have those accounts, they have expiration dates, many of them. If you don't have any activity for a couple of years, keep track of them. Use those points and don't leave them laying there forever, because they don't go up in value. And it's better to use them while you can actively travel than to leave them around for the grandkids to use.
Some great tips and good ideas. Again, thanks so much, Mark. It's Mark Hoffman. He's owner of Sports Leisure Vacations at sportsleisure.com. Once again, Mark, thanks so much, and look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you, Andy. You be well.